Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with what appears to be a standoff between the FBI Director and the Attorney General following reports that FBI Director Comey asked the Justice Department to publicly reject Trump's claim that President Obama had wiretapped him, a charge that came in a Trump tweet calling Obama a bad or sick guy. Julian Sanchez, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute who focuses on issues at the intersection of technology, privacy, civil liberties, and new media, joins us to discuss his article at Just Security, Tapping Trump. We will examine why we have not heard anything from the Justice Department yet, while the White House continues to insist that there is something going on, without offering any evidence as to what that something is. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is trying to equate the nothing that they are offering up in terms of evidence to support Trump's smear against Obama with something real that U.S. intelligence agencies have established, and that is the reality that the Russians, directed by Putin, interfered in our elections to help elect Trump. Then we'll speak with Aaron Rupa, a journalist at Think Progress, where he just wrote the article Trump to Track Honor Killings by Muslim Men While Proposing Cuts to Violence Against Women Grants. We will look into how Trump and his chief strategist, Stephen Bannon, both of whom have been accused of domestic assault, demonize and stigmatize minorities like Muslims by instructing Homeland Security in the second Muslim ban signed today to collect information on an imaginary epidemic of Muslim honor killings while cutting $480 million from the Department of Justice to eliminate violence against women grants when 1,500 American women are killed each year by their spouses. This follows Trump's recent launch of an office at DOJ called VOICE, Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement, to solve another exaggerated problem of mayhem from Latino immigrants who are less likely to commit crimes than native-born Americans. Then finally, we'll examine the money pouring into school board races in Los Angeles to enable the charter school movement backed by multimillionaires like Eli Broad and the former LA Mayor Reardon to attain a majority on the school board that will further the so-called school choice agenda of Trump and Betsy DeVos. Kevin Kumashiro, the Dean of the School of Education at the University of San Francisco, joins us to discuss what kind of return on investment the funders of charter school candidates want. And joining us now is Julian Sanchez, who is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, who focuses primarily on issues at the intersection of technology, privacy, civil liberties, and new media. Previously, he served as the Washington editor for the technology news site Ars Technica, and he has an article at Just Security, Tapping Trump. Welcome to Background Briefing, Julian Sanchez.
Glad to be on.
And what do you make of this standoff, if indeed that's the way to describe it, between Director Comey of the FBI and the Justice Department, presumably Jeff Sessions? The New York Times has been reporting, and other news outlets have been reporting, that Comey himself demanded that the Justice Department clear the air over Donald Trump's charges that they were involved in wiretapping, or the Obama specifically was involved in wiretapping people in Trump Tower. Comey apparently feels that the FBI is getting a bad rap on this because it didn't happen, according to him, or at least according to these news reports. So how come we haven't heard the Justice Department statement echoing Comey's demands?
I mean, I suppose the simple, perhaps cynical explanation would just be that the Justice Department is nervous about directly conflicting the boss, essentially saying that Trump had leveled this quite serious accusation on the basis of nothing, essentially, which does appear to be the most likely explanation for what happened here. It may also be in part, if we want a maybe more legitimate one, just that in general, the Justice Department does not get in the business of providing public announcements about whether they have or haven't used particular surveillance tools every time someone on the internet might make an accusation of that kind. This is, of course, a somewhat special case since it's the president making the accusation, but you do understand why, as a general rule, they wouldn't want to be in the habit of commenting on every claim of this kind, because if they say, no, it's not true that we wiretapped this time, but they don't make the same statement the next time, people might read that as confirmation. Well, why didn't you deny it the next time?
Well, but the question would arise then, if Comey was able to send that letter prior to the election that was Hillary Clinton's claims cost her the election, why can't he send out a letter now or make a statement now? Why does he need the Justice Department's permission?
Well, I mean, I think he wanted probably the cover of the Justice Department, so it's not him speaking unilaterally, but the institution sort of confirming what he's saying there. He may yet get that. We'll see how that unfolds as this move forward. This is also a little bit tricky because, of course, Jeff Sessions has very publicly recused himself from involvement in that inquiry, so there are going to be questions about whether that recusal sort of covers commenting on claims that are related to that investigation. But we'll see. He may well decide if the Justice Department thinks why that he's going to move forward. And frankly, the fact that his protest leaked to press suggests perhaps that was his way of trying to force their hand. That is to say, I sort of find it unlikely that the New York Times got hold of these accounts in detail of how unhappy Comey was without his permission.
So in your article, Julian Sanchez, Tapping Trump at Just Security, you sort of go through, the genesis of what Trump is perhaps talking about here in terms of how, it all starts with the former British, the former Tory MP, Louise Mensch, who wrote an article on her blog, Heat Street. Actually, it was the day before the election, I think, it came out, talking about the FISA warrant. So, and then that eventually went through various stages from the right-wing talk show host to Breitbart, and then from the president's tweeting. So can you walk us through what you understand, the genesis of this charge, which has been widely refuted, and essentially the demand still is out there? Where's the evidence, you know?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, the initial claim, at least, was in that blog post on Heat Street. I don't know how much independent credibility that should have. It used the word warrant, but it's not clear that the author was necessarily being very precise about the distinction between a warrant and a court order, which is actually an important distinction in American law. There are different standards involved, and they permit different kinds of things. But then The Guardian and the BBC, which I do assume have some levels of fact-checking and source verification, made somewhat modest claims. They didn't use the word warrant. They talked about court order, and they referred to, and this may well be accurate, although I'll note that I haven't seen sort of the major intelligence reporters at publications like the New York Times or the Washington Post, which have been trying very hard, of course, to confirm this and report it out on their own, being able to do so. So take that with however many grains of salt you think appropriate. But the reports indicated that there had been, in the course of an interagency investigation into Russian influence on the presidential election, initially an application for some kind of order, not necessarily a wiretap order, that was looking to run down whether there had been financial transfers of money funneled to four individuals linked to the Trump campaign who also have ties to Russia. The FISA court, the Secret Foreign Intelligence Court, apparently declined to issue those, sent them back to narrow it down. Not terribly surprising when you're talking about orders concerning an active presidential campaign. But then in October, some kind of order was ultimately issued that targeted not the Trump associates, but rather the Russian bank. So this might have been a kind of communications wiretap order targeting the financial institutions. It might have been an order requiring the turnover records of transactions or other kinds of documentary evidence. None of that is really clear from the reports. But critically, even assuming that is basically accurate, that is radically different from anything Trump suggested. One is an order targeting Russian banks in order to look into the possibility of money transfers to Trump associates. That is just sort of 180 degrees different in terms of how concerning or inappropriate it would be from wiretapping phones at Trump Tower where the campaign was being headquartered. So those are just very different things. So even if we assume the accuracy of those sources, it doesn't really support what Trump claims. But the radio host Mark Levin and the Breitbart article, drawing on those sources and linking to those original sources, kind of lumped together a lot of different claims about different aspects of what some on the right and supporters of President Trump see as a sort of intelligence community soft coup or attempt to undermine the Trump administration. And so they were talking about things like, for example, and you know, this is not speculative at all, but the fact that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was intercepted in conversation with the Russian ambassador, and that there were some leaks about that that ultimately torpedoed his career with the administration. Those, of course, were intercepts that were collected not because anyone was targeting Flynn, but because the NSA, American intelligence agencies, just routinely surveil foreign agents like the Russian ambassador. And so to the extent that you are talking to someone who is under surveillance, legitimately under U.S. law, your conversations may get swept up. And in this case, it seems to have been disseminated as relevant for intelligence purposes. So these things were all sort of bundled together as evidence to support this idea of a kind of intelligence insurgency against the administration. It seems as though, and this is based on White House staff telling reporters that they think Trump was basing his tweet accusations on that Breitbart article, it seems like he may have, I don't know, read it quickly or not very thoroughly, or just found it just complicated, and ended up coming away from it with the impression that this was saying that somehow Barack Obama had ordered wiretaps on the Trump campaign or on Trump Tower. There are various issues with the Breitbart article, but if you sort of look at it closely, it doesn't actually seem to allege that.
But the White House itself, for example, Kellyanne Conway said that he's the president of the United States. He has information intelligence that the rest of us do not have, and that's the way it should be. And then the other spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she on the Sunday talk show says, well, if something happened, it was the worst thing that could ever happen in the history of the United States. I'm paraphrasing somewhat loosely. And then Sean Spicer, the press secretary, said there's no question that something happened. Well, you can say that about anything. There's always something's happening somewhere, right? I mean, if it happened, if, that's, I mean, I find that extraordinary that how thin these claims are, but it seems almost like a tactic that on the one hand we know that the intelligence community before the election, a consensus of the intelligence community was such that they said Russia is indeed involved in interfering in our election and that they believed that the orders came from the very top, meaning Vladimir Putin. So that's already a fact established by the intelligence community. The idea that Barack Obama is wiretapping Trump Tower and Trump himself is not a fact, but by muddying the waters, and when you got Devin Nunes, the chair of the House Republican Intelligence Committee, saying that we got to investigate both the Russians and this claim, is that a tactic? In other words, you got a real thing on the one hand, and you're balancing the real thing with something that's completely made up.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a certain element of sort of narrative jujitsu here. It's an attempt to sort of flip the conversation and change the subject to not what incriminating information might this investigation be turning up or indicating, but you're making the investigation itself a tool to kind of accuse your opponents of political abuse. But I will say, this is not, I think, a completely baseless category of concerns. I think the specific allegation here that somehow Barack Obama had personally ordered wiretapping on Trump Tower, there's no evidence at all of that. And if there were, you know, secret or classified evidence, the president has the authority to declassify it, and certainly one would expect that he would and ought to. But, you know, any time even a legitimate intelligence investigation overlaps with domestic politics. I mean, that is the kind of scenario where you are at highest risk of abuse of power. Even legitimate investigations, looking into our history, have often gathered information that ends up being used later in improper or political ways to gain some kind of a political advantage. So I don't find it crazy to worry about that in the abstract. And given the volume of what seem to be intelligence leaks about the administration, even if they're exposing certainly problematic issues, I think it is worth looking at that with a slightly jaundiced eye and saying, all right, why is this stuff leaking in such high volume? Is this just purely public-spirited, or is this, an extension of politics? Those are, I think, valid concerns to raise. It's just that I don't think they should be licensed to attempt to deflect legitimate concerns by, again, fabricating sort of additional abuses that there's no evidence for.
Well, I think that what people find shocking, and I personally find it shocking, is that a president has accused his predecessor of being a bad or sick guy. The tweet from Donald Trump in question is, how low has President Obama gone to tap, and tap is spelled T-A-P-P, my phones during the very sacred election process. This is Nixon, Watergate, bad or sick guy. That's a different level of. I think it takes the issue into a different arena, doesn't it? Not just.
Yes. No. This is worlds removed from any kind of legitimate underlying concern that there might be about. Is there proper control over information that's acquired in the course of a legitimate investigation? Because it is so totally disconnected from fact. There's nothing to indicate, one, that there was a wiretap of Trump Tower. The director of National Intelligence has denied it. Jim Comey, the director of the FBI, has denied it. And there's certainly nothing to indicate that it was done at some kind of personal direction of the former president. So, this is an accusation of what would really be a serious crime, I think, certainly at the very least a gross impropriety. I think President Trump should be perhaps glad that he did not, as he promised during the campaign, open up the libel laws, because you think the former president would have a decent case then.
So what do you think is happening in general with Donald Trump and the campaign promises he makes and his determination to enact them? In other words, we all know the politicians sometimes make reckless and exaggerated claims on the stump, and they always tend to try to either walk them back or try to ignore them. But in this case, some of the more ridiculous claims that he's made, like building a wall, etc., and our defenses are completely decrepit, dilapidated. I'm trying to remember what the actual word was. You're talking about our generals are all demoralized, etc. And he's asked for another $54 billion, which, by the way, is the entire annual defense budget of Russia itself. That's in addition, bringing it up to about $603 billion. And it feels like that just dealing with the defense issue, that we're talking about, money being thrown at something without strategy. In other words, is there a strategy behind any of this, or is this simply I made these promises and I'm going to keep them no matter whether they make sense or not?
Yeah, I think the president does not seem to have shown an enormous amount of curiosity about the sort of policy mechanics of the government that he now finds himself at the head of. It was a quote from a few days ago saying something to the effect of, well, no one could ever have imagined that healthcare policy would be so complicated, when I think, in fact, quite a lot of people imagined that it was quite complicated. Having moved from a sort of successful career as a kind of reality TV personality and having won a vocal and enthusiastic base, by sort of shooting from the hip in that way, he's this is a president who seems to be pretty media obsessed. That is to say, and this is very unusual for a president, but he reportedly spends hours every day watching cable news and becoming happy or angry depending on how favorably he's being covered on cable news programs. Traditionally, presidents don't have a ton of time for that, but he does seem to think that the most important thing about his presidency is going to be essentially how the news covers it, which in a weird way is sort of flattering to the media that he otherwise seems to have a pretty dim view of. It does seem like that's his metric of success. We heard from one of the many, many, many leaks from White House insiders that, Saturday he began very happy that all the news networks were covering his wiretapping allegations, but then became increasingly upset as even Republicans mostly sort of declined to mount a defense of these sort of unsubstantiated accusations. This is kind of a pattern that suggests that, and at some level, almost the idea that this is policy that has consequences and has real harm that it can create if it's not implemented well, almost isn't on his radar. The question is whether he can say he checked off a box or whether the news is going to report that he did one of the sort of marquee things that he was promising during the campaign.
Well, just in the last minute, though, Julian Sanchez, that's a kind of peculiar dynamic, isn't it? If you spend hours a day watching how you're being reviewed by cable, and of course, on Fox he gets good reviews, and on MSNBC they're not so good.
Sure.
So, for example, if you're an actor, you've actually got to go on stage and do something in order to get reviews. The more time you watch the reviews, the less time you actually do the job that is reviewed. I mean, is that the dynamic we're in?
I mean, it certainly seems like it. I mean, again, we were seeing some of these sort of Twitter rants going off at 5 in the morning. Reports that say again he's spending hours of the day on that and delegating or not showing a whole ton of interest in sort of the policy details. Apparently, in terms of the presidential daily brief, the intelligence briefing, the agencies have sort of had to alter the way they do that and basically said, look, the president doesn't seem to be very interested in much in the way of details, try and keep everything to one page. There's, I suppose, something to be said for delegation to, sort of competent experts if you have picked competent experts. Whether that's the case is another question, and maybe additional cause for concern. But, we've seen him flying back to Mar-a-Lago to golf pretty regularly. I think he needs to be discovering that being president is not as fun as he had hoped.
Well, Julian Sanchez, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me on.
And again, I've been speaking with Julian Sanchez, who's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, who focuses primarily on issues at the intersection of technology, privacy, civil liberties, and new media. Previously, he served as the Washington editor for the technology news site Ars Technica, and he has an article at Just Security, Tapping Trump. We're going to take a brief station break and be back looking into the second Muslim ban signed today by Donald Trump.